Looking Forward.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Looking Forward with me, Svetlana Yakimenko.
And with me, Viktor Arafeev. Hello, everybody.
Viktor, the theme we're going to touch upon today is something that I was hesitant initially to talk about. You have to agree, talking about assisted suicide, about euthanasia. Well, it's a debate that's been on for quite a while, hasn't it?
Yes. No, the theme is very important. I think even before it started, we also always, when you read a book, when you think about the humanity, you always think, what does it mean to be old?
Mm.
What does it mean to come close to death and how to react to it? And that's why it's eternal a theme. But now when humanity decides to take more responsibility about their body, about themselves, this theme starts to be really hot and radical.
Exactly. And, well, apparently support is growing for assisted suicide. Well, in the United States, among adults there, 56% of the U.S. adults describe assisted suicide as, quote, morally acceptable, compared to 37% who call the practice immoral. This is according to a Gallup report. And, of course, California recently became the fifth U.S. state to legalize assisted suicide. So one wonders. Of course, many remain committed to banning the practice. One wonders about the different aspects of it, the moral side, of course. Church comes into here as well. And, of course, until one is faced personally with this problem, like you have, for example, a relative who is old, ill, on life support, how does one choose which side to turn to?
It's a very difficult choice. And, you know, when you say about morals, I think it's also very important because, you know, some people are good and nice, but some people start to think, well, he has or she has money, she is old, and la, 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 la.
But I'm just wondering, how could one take a decision to take, for example, someone in their family off life support, make that decision? It would be very difficult to live on after that, with that thought, having knowing that you made that choice.
Well, yes. No, this is a very difficult question. Personally, what do you think about it?
I have to tell you honestly,
yes,
I still haven't decided yet. I really don't know. I understand the pros and cons of both sides of the debate.
Do you have some evolution in your thoughts? Let's say, what did you think 10 years ago and now?
I definitely was against it.
Definitely against it.
And now I'm on the fence. Yes, I'm hesitating.
Why? There's disproportion.
I'll tell you why. I'm getting older and more of my friends are getting older. And I have seen them struggling with sick parents and sick relatives who are in a great deal of pain, or maybe they're not in pain, but they don't know who they are. They're unconscious. It's difficult when it's in your family.
Yes.
I suggest this is the moment when we turn to our guest on the show, Jason Negri, who's Assistant Director of the Patients' Rights Council.
Looking Forward.
Today, we've been discussing the assisted suicide debate, and it was inspired by the fact that, according to Gallup, support is growing for assisted suicide among U.S. adults, with nearly 7 in 10 Americans saying doctors should be legally allowed to assist terminally ill patients in committing suicide. It's a very difficult topic to discuss, of course, and my first question would be, what are euthanasia and assisted suicide, and is there a difference between them?
Well, the difference is in who does the final act that actually causes the death of the patient. If it's the patient herself being helped by somebody else, then it's assisted suicide. For example, if this other person provides the drugs and gives them to the patient, but the patient takes them herself, then that would be considered the last act. So it's a physician-assisted suicide or assisted suicide. So if somebody else sets everything in motion, but the patient does the final act herself, it's assisted suicide. But if somebody else actually administers a lethal injection, or if that other person pulls the trigger of a gun or smothers the patient with a plastic bag, all of those cases, it would be considered euthanasia because that other person is doing the final act that causes death.
Jason, what is the essence of this assisted suicide debate? I mean, is it because of the various loopholes? Is it the difficult legislation? Is it the moral issue?
Well, the debate, the public debate, of course, I think revolves around how it impacts people in society. You know, euthanasia and assisted suicide are not private acts. It's a matter of public concern. We're particularly concerned about the effect it's having on vulnerable people, because once assisted suicide, at least in America, that's where the debate is, once assisted suicide is seen as a legitimate medical treatment, once killing is seen as an acceptable solution to a person's severe illness or disability, then this long-standing legal protection for the vulnerable will be severely weakened. Those who with disabilities, those who are elderly, people who have terminal conditions, they're going to feel greatly increased pressure to just get out of the way. People in these conditions are already marginalized in our society. They face discrimination or disdain. And once doctor-prescribed suicide becomes accepted in our society, what starts as a right for some can all too easily become an expectation for all. The very availability of assisted suicide or euthanasia puts pressure on people to choose it, or at least to consider it as one among many options. In America, at least, we're finally seeing some attention being paid to the problem of elder abuse. Seniors who are being taken advantage of by their younger relatives and caregivers. Sometimes it's physical abuse, sometimes financial. It often involves emotional abuse. Well, how do we think this terrible reality will mix with legalized assisted suicide or euthanasia? Are we interested in protecting our seniors and helping those who have disabilities become more fully integrated into society? Do we really care about helping them flourish as human beings? Or are we just looking to get rid of them because we see them as a burden? What kind of society do we want to be? And that's really the essence of the debate here.
Yes, that's true. I mean, that's what I was worrying about. Think of the vulnerable people, like the disabled, the terminally ill, the sick, the really elderly people who, as Jason just said, are marginalized anyway. Sometimes their care for them is very costly.
Yes, I was thinking when I was listening to other guests, yes, sometimes it's really difficult just to help them. And then they probably start to understand that we could propose them to do something.
Do you think that they could also themselves feel that they are a burden on their relatives?
Yes. Not only that, but you understand, they see us responsible, nice to them, but at the same time, they feel that there is something in us which is probably not so natural. And we start to be more irritating or whatever, you know. And then it's like something come, like a big black cloud above them.
And it will be there, because once the legislation has been passed, I know what you mean, yes. It will be there.
Exactly.
You will. They will feel that.
They will feel, we will feel.
That's true.
Sometimes.
And there will be no going back from that already, because it will have become a reality, an option.
An option, and then also the whole world and the whole life is going to be changed.
It's going to impact it, yes.
Yes, because, you know, they are all of contemporary people, I think, in the Western civilization against the death penalty.
Exactly,
right? But at the same time, I do not want to compare, but still it is something that is coming closer from the moral point of view, that you could decide or you could push someone to come to this idea to suicide and to help this person to finish his life in this way.
It's true. Let's get back to Jason Negri.
Looking forward.
And then, of course, I mean, so many people are saying that euthanasia and assisted suicide activists actually exploit the natural fear that people have of suffering and dying, whereas virtually, well, pain can be eliminated or reduced significantly, because they're saying that the whole purpose of euthanasia and assisted suicide is to, well, relieve pain. But surely in the 21st century, we have enough advanced drugs and medical care to help people deal with the pain.
We do. I mean, medical progress has really made great strides, and we do have great advances in pain management and control. My organization, the Patients' Rights Council, we have a book published called Power Over Pain that deals specifically with that issue. But the fact that assisted suicide or euthanasia is being offered as a solution for people who are in great pain, that's a common misconception. In America, at least, there are no requirements anywhere about symptoms. And actually, the studies suggest that in the places where assisted suicide has been legal, state of Oregon, for example, the main reasons that people opt for assisted suicide tends to be social reasons. They don't want to deal with the loss of autonomy, the inability to do certain things, the debilitations that come with age, and their loss of dignity, as they call it. Those are the reasons that people give. The people giving reasons for pain being their motivation, it's not even in the top five reasons. And they conflate pain with the fear of pain. Well, I mean, everybody fears to experience pain, but it isn't really a primary reason or even a secondary or tertiary reason why people would choose assisted suicide. The facts and the data just don't bear that out. When it's first proposed, I mean, that really gets a lot of mileage in the public debates, you know, that it's only going to be reserved for people who are dying or experiencing unbearable pain. And people talk about all the safeguards that are supposedly in place. But the experience shows that in places where these things have been accepted, particularly in Holland and Belgium, where euthanasia are legal, it shows that the numbers just keep climbing, and the list of people who are eligible for euthanasia continues to grow. For example, in 2002, Belgium legalized euthanasia, and there were supposedly strict controls in place. It was only going to be available to those who were diagnosed with a terminal condition and who were experiencing unbearable suffering. Well, we've seen what's happened since then. The list of people eligible for euthanasia has grown bigger and bigger until now. 1 in 20 deaths in Belgium are from euthanasia.
Unbelievable. I didn't realize that the list of those eligible for euthanasia was growing like that. And social issues are chosen. I always thought that it was something that involved being terminally ill or in great pain, but apparently social issues factor in.
Yeah, and then you know what? I think that there's such a thing called depression. And from time to time, if something's wrong in our lives, we start to think...
It happens to everyone, doesn't
it? And then during such a period of depression, you decide to do what you can do now, and probably in 1 month, 2 months, your decision will be totally different. What do you think about that?
I agree, but there's something that Jason mentioned.
Because we are not robots.
Of course not. Of course, and factors change, we change in a matter of days, the situation could change. But what Jason mentioned about social issues, loss of dignity, loss of mobility, that I could understand for someone, for example, who has been very active, very much in the limelight all their lives, and suddenly illness has them bedridden, unable to walk, unable to be useful in society. For them, it could be a tremendous personal crisis.
But probably, I think this is a more important question than that, more important problem, because, you know, during all our life, we tried to work harder. We tried to be more social and more social. We do not think about ourselves as human beings. We do not know what will happen later on. We are not prepared for the changes. They are coming, but we are not prepared for them. And that's why the radical thought could come and this thought could kill us.
And that is, of course, one side. And the other side would be the legislation, because I think once legislation is in place, there will all people different, as you say, and there will always be someone who might abuse that legislation.
Absolutely so.
And would want to cut costs, for example.
Yeah,
cut
well,
expenses.
They'll find a lot of reasons to just propose it, you know, or just to push. And, you know, sometimes all the people are very weak.
Sometimes people in society, modern society, find themselves overwhelmed, find themselves marginalized. That might push them to make the wrong decision at that particular moment.
Exactly. And then, you know, you can come back from this decision.
Exactly, yeah. And then again, just think of the relatives, the friends, the people around that particular person.
And could you imagine discussion when someone say yes?
I can't imagine that. I simply can't imagine that.
Could you imagine just a family discussion about what should we do with such and such person in our family?
It starts
to be terrible.
Yes. Well, what you mentioned about people suffering depression sometimes, and at that particular moment, that depression might push them over the edge.
Exactly so.
Well, probably people have to learn to deal with all sorts of situations. It's always a fight, isn't it? Survival is a fight.
Yes.
And to the very end,
not only
really.
Survival, even our life is a big fight.
Well, on that note, I think that it's a debate that will continue.
Yeah, and I think so too.
It will continue on a legislative level, but in our hearts, everyone has to choose where they stand on
you
this debate.
Totally right.
And that's it for this edition of Looking Forward with me, Svetlana Yakimenko.
And with me, Viktor Ерофеев. Bye-bye, everybody. All the best.